Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
Okay, this is Sarah Bradbury for Fred Film Radio, and I'm here today with Carlos Riadas to discuss his film Our Time, which is going to be released here in the UK on the 12th of July. So, Carlos, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Welcome to London.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so I guess for people who aren't already familiar with your new film, Our Time, maybe you can give us, in your own words, a brief synopsis. What's this film all about for you?
It's a film about contradiction, human contradiction, a marriage that live in bullfighting states, and then there is an American horse breaker that comes around, and him and the woman have a sexual relationship, and it's not about the classical thing we've known always, who will she choose, like the good looking guy or the good husband that she's had, but rather how them to try to go around this issue and what does it mean for them, and then how this turns into something else, which is some sort of voyeuristic ride, something like that. And then it's all about love and people falling and getting up again.
And you made the brave decision of casting yourself, your partner, your kids in the film, but it's also set in a very specific location, this kind of bull ranch. So what was the inspiration for this story, and what was that process like of, you know, being in your own film and your family being in your own film?
Well, the bullfighting thing is just something that is sort of all very old-fashioned and almost gone. But I think this is a beautiful animal that is about to disappear. I mean, it only exists like for meat purposes. But like the old bull that was there present in Mediterranean, African, and Eastern cultures is gone, apart from these bullfighting places. So I wanted to do a film there, and I wanted a poet to be doing this kind of work. And then the idea of me being there and my wife, my children, that's just because I work pretty much as an artisan and I need to work with what I have handy. This film took us 3 years. It was just so much more practical to do it. But in the end, for me, it's a banality that we're there. It's not about reality, you know. It's easy to make a literal connection and think we live life like that. But it's actually exactly the opposite of autofiction. Rather than drawing from reality to fictionalize, I'm drawing from fiction, and I'm making it with the real, if you want, with myself, my children, our clothing, our way of feeling, our own feelings. But the actual filming wasn't traumatic or anything like that, because we were not living the lives of the characters, which is what people think. I know this can be disappointing, but actually this, we would finish shooting and we would think of very practical issues, and actually it was a very good time between my wife and I, and during the film we actually had to fight physically, you know, and things like that that were quite rough, but we would end up and we would just laugh and just enjoy ourselves very much. It was a beautiful time.
And talk to me about the location, because it does seem that nature is very key in this film. There's lots of scenes that kind of linger on, looking at, you know, where they're based, looking over into the Mexican countryside. So what role does that play, and how did you work with your director of photography to kind of really drink that in?
Well, you know, the narrative in a film, it's not just the narrative of whatever needs to be said. I just used as a tool so the story may move on. The narrative actually is a physical one to a very large extent, an atmospheric one. What you hear, what you see are the film itself, as important or probably even more than the story, than the plot proper. So it's, for me, it's very important to have access to that and to give the viewer access to that time, that let's call it that emotional space. So I'm very keen on that, and I work hard with time. I don't use the time of edition that you see, or montage that you see in series, in most of commercial cinema, where it's all about telling a story. I think for telling a story, literature is much better suited. So cinema is much more about presence and sound and images and movement, and of course it's narrative as well, because life is chronological and film exists in time, or thanks to time, and that's just the way it flows and goes. And with my director of photography, I just work very simply. I tell him what to do, and he tells me about the light, and we come to terms, and then he shoots. Mm-hmm. Or I shoot when I'm not being in front of the camera.
And those are incredibly powerful images. I think particularly the opening sequence, where you sort of have these layers, if you like, the innocence of the children, then moving towards the teenagers on the beach, and then the adults going about their lives. There's also other moments, I'm thinking of the bulls fighting, which somehow reflects some of the issues of masculinity that we perhaps...
I don't think so.
No?
I think that's just something that has been said and people think about it over and over. Mm. But, you know, the masculine guys in the film don't even fight. They talk
in a very
mostly civilized manner, you know, probably abusing power, thinking of themselves, or, you know, having their hidden agenda. But it's much more, it's a completely different approach. But some people think, you know, someone came up with this absurd idea of masculine toxicity, and then it's been repeated over and over. For me, this film could have been two women having the ranch, or two men, or the woman could have been the man, and the man the woman. For me, it's all about humans, you know, human contradiction, and this thing of one is more obsessive, one is more rational, the other one is more sentimental. These are attributes that women or men can have equally, I think. That's all present there in the film, and it makes it... There seem to be a lot of codes and complicated issues there, but actually it's just presentation rather than representation. So what you see is just a bit of life, and you can connect it with it in your own terms.
Mm. And I do think what's fascinating about the way you build these characters is that none are particularly likable, but all are very relatable in some senses. And there's a real realism to all the sort of the spectrum of emotions. Nothing is straightforward. There's no good guy or bad guy in this film. So is that something that's also very important to you, to kind of like tease out the nuances of how we feel in human relationships?
Absolutely. Yeah. You just for me, now that you were saying that, it's exactly the way I feel about life. No one is a hero. No one is completely despisable or anything. We're all very complex. We have our bright sides, our darker sides, moments of expansion, moments of contraction. And no one is... Nowadays, because probably we have such a crisis of identity, we tend to define people by a single action or by something they said once or whatever, instead of understanding that what we really are is what we do every day, and what we think in every day, and what we desire every single moment of our lives. And a lot of those things are invisible, and even to ourselves very often. So yes, I do try to build against this idea of character building, which is actually reduction to caricature. Even like in the good old Greek times, with the best of Western literature, even the Odyssey and all those pieces of work or videos, whatever, it was all about reducing to symbols, to archetypes. But we are not archetypes. This is just a way to explain little parts of conduct, you know. But for me, it's very important to, as you said, be able to relate, but not made out of what we see heroes, you know. It's not about heroes.
And I guess there's also, I think there's this moment where your character is talking to his son in bed and sort of saying, you know, life is sometimes difficult, isn't it? But overall, it's wonderful. And so I guess, not that there maybe would be a direct message from the film, but do you think that you would hope that that's what people take away beyond all these other things that we have to battle with, of forgiveness or how we interact with people?
Sure thing, that's the message. But included the response of the child, which is distant over all that. Yes, overall. that's what I would have to say for that.
And how do you see that this film perhaps fits in with your previous films? Do you see that there's a thread that holds these together, or some kind of evolution of expanding your ideas of what we can do on the screen?
You know, every time I make a new film, I think of it as a first film. I don't want to, you know, put up with expectatives or have a program of what I have to do or prove or, you know, talk about. But in the end, of course, things adopt just because they come from one single person. So there's a thread, a forceful thread. But that's really not for me to discuss, apart from the fact that technically I do think about cinema as language more and more, and what is it to film, and what does it mean, and how is it that you want to film. And for me, it's all about presence. More and more I have the idea of presence rather than representation. So not I don't want to illustrate with cinema, use it as a device to illustrate literature, but to use it as, or rather to use it to understand it as an art of presence and presentation. And that's why I'm more and more keen in the way I film and in the way I use sound to approach presence and not representation. Yeah.
How would you reflect on the broader cinema landscape currently? I mean, it does seem that like your part of the world is producing some exceptional filmmakers and creativity. Thinking of Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which is extremely well this year. So, how do you see that we are? You know, we've got a very healthy cinema industry at the moment. And in what ways do you feel that perhaps there's room for improvement or more boundaries we need to push?
I think actually, as you said, we have a very healthy industry of cinema, but we have a very unhealthy cinema. Mm-hmm. What I mean to say is that entertainment cinema is very important, and it has to exist for sure, but the balance is completely off any sort of guarantee for minorities, if you want. Mm. The weight of entertainment cinema and entertainment as a whole is extreme. And the space for non-codified bilateral cinema, where you're not meant to put your brain in the off position and just be fed, but participate, is too small. Doesn't have any place in television, not even in those famous platforms. Mm. Theaters are closing, and the worst part is that this cinema, which was part of our culture, it was available for everybody, now is tending to exist only like in maybe museums or very small cinemas, which have a very terrible drawback, which is that they are curated, and then there's the fans and the people that are within the system that will forcefully like it, and they like it also because it's very unknown. So this makes the people that like it very special. Hmm. And this backfires, you know. I wish these films were, like, when I started making films, out there for the bigger public. Hmm. And television wouldn't have renounced to all these films just because they have to justify their fees with the amount of people watching the films. So now we're living in some sort of dictatorship of majorities, which is pretty totalitarian and hegemonic. Mm. And that's kind of sad, actually. It's a very unhealthy moment, but it all has to do with a total final triumph of, you know, consumerism. And now it seems like we exploit ourselves all day long, and then we compensate with the antidote, which is entertainment. Mm. Entertainment. And that's why all these platforms you're talking about need so much content, this beautiful word, content. We need the content. We need the drug, like in Aldous Huxley's The Brave New World, that little pill that kept us alive and happy so we can carry on. But in The Brave New World, it was a beautiful, positive pill, you know, like an ecstasy pill. Mm. But now the drug is like more like a depressive drug of the nervous system, more like marijuana or something like that, so we may carry on. It's a sad moment. I think it's a dark moment, but it will change.
Yeah. Well, we've still got filmmakers like you to buck the trend. Can you give us a hint at what topic or what kind of film you might be working on next?
You know, I've been thinking about it for more than 5 years, but I think I will probably change my mind soon. This happens to me every time. My films are so connected to what I'm living through, to my thoughts of the present, and they are always changing. You know, we move on, we change, and now I don't know exactly know, but I'm starting to feel a rejection for which I have thoughts about for so many years now, and read and prepared, and now I'm changing. This is the incredible thing, and this happens with cinema too. You know, the language of cinema itself, like music or like the written language for literature, people, writers, is changing always, not only throughout history but throughout your own life. Some people think the language of cinema is fixed. I don't know why. Like, this is the way to make films. Like, we have to make films like Orson Welles, ad infinitum. And that is such an absurd idea. So I'm changing also in the approach to what I want to do. Mm. So I really don't know right now.
Okay. Well, we'll wait with bated breath to find out.
If I'm still alive, yes.
All right, Carlos, thank you so much for sharing all that with us. And congratulations again on a really wonderful, wonderful film. And I've been Sarah Bradbury for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.